Welcome to Inclusion Bites, your sanctuary for bold conversations that spark change. I'm Joanne Lockwood, your guide on this journey of exploration into the heart of inclusion, belonging, and societal transformation. Ever wondered what it truly takes to create a world where everyone not only belongs, but thrives? You're not alone. Join me as we uncover the unseen, challenge the status quo, and share stories that resonate deep within. Ready to dive in? Whether you're sipping your morning coffee or winding down after a long day, let's connect, reflect, and inspire action together. Don't forget, you can be part of the conversation too. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seechangehappen.co.uk to share your insights or to join me on the show. So adjust your earbuds and settle in. It's time to ignite the spark of inclusion with Inclusion Bites. Today is episode 158 with the title Confidence, Balance and Success. And I have the absolute honor and privilege to welcome James R. Elliott.
Hello, hello.
James is a transformational coach and international speaker with over 24 years of helping business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals build thriving businesses whilst maintaining freedom and their personal fulfillment. And when I asked James to describe his superpower, he said it is empowering people to unlock their potential and take action towards a confident, balanced, and successful life. So, James, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Joanne. Appreciate it.
That's a pleasure. We'll chat just now. And you're from Toronto in Canada?
Yes, I am. Yep. I'm born and raised here. Traveled to the world, but born and raised right here at home. Yeah.
You're across the border behind the northern wall.
Yeah. Exactly. The northern Trump wall.
The United States of Trump at the moment. Yeah.
We are. We're behind the northern Trump, the invisible perhaps Trump wall, but it's there.
Yeah. So, James, it's great to have you on. I'm pleased you've given up your time today. And your work revolves around confidence, you say balance, and helping others. Because you want to help them create their life they love. So what inspired you? What got you into this? What's your experience?
My life, a life of a lot of lessons and learning. You may not wish for my life, but I love it. And it's been great. Ups and downs, failures. And I no longer believe in failure. It's just only growth and learnings and feedback. You win or you learn, really, is my thoughts. So depending how far back you want me to go. Long story. Well, I'll start with the corporate world, and then we come back to the childhood too. But the corporate world learned a lot there, working for companies like IBM, Novell, which is the Microsoft in the 1980s, and Lenovo, the computer company. Working for years and years there as well, a variety of roles, all dealing with people, all touching people, all helping people. In fact, a lot of my career, it was my role to support and empower our resellers, our business partners to do well in a variety of ways. And when they did well, they sold more of our products. Thus, we did well in myself. You know, I was compensated on how well they did. So it was in my best interest to make sure that a lot of our business partners, some very, very small mom and pop shops, multi-million dollar, like I some of them 50, 60, 70 million dollar quarters, some quarters, depending who I was working with. And I always had a combination of mom and pop shops who were very proud to, when he hit his first million, this one gentleman, and I was proud of him too, very proud. I've had, like I said, companies with 30, 35, 40 million dollar quotas that we're working on. Coming from there, learning a lot, learning a great deal, but also learning, you know, how I don't want to run my business. Learning great leaders, not so great leaders, great cultures, not so great cultures. It was a fantastic lesson that way when I started my own business 11 years ago, helping people, businesses small and large. It's been an incredible journey, again, up and down and all around, like much of life is, and helps us learn high highs and low lows, just like life, just like leadership, just like entrepreneurship, right? Life has a lot of great stuff, and we focus on that, we feel pretty great. Life has a lot of not so great stuff, and we focus on the not so great stuff, we're going to feel not so great. So I've learned really to become highly resilient and perseverant. One of the things I speak on, one of the things I love to teach is perseverance and really how to get through immense challenges, tough times, adversity, during great times of challenge and change, and how leaders can help themselves and their teams do that too, because that was me. It's a very authentic thing. That was me persevering through all the things that, and I'm happy to chat about those. We can get into them too. But that's really how I got into what I do. I've always been I love teaching, always love helping people. I always love supporting people. I'm making an impact and really helping people who want to help people. Always love to do that. And so it became a fairly natural thing for me, first as a coach and then very, very quickly transitioned to being speaker, teacher, because I just love giving, love teaching, love big audiences. So that's in a nutshell how, at least recently, how I got in things. Laid off in the height of my corporate career, not once, but twice. So, and I didn't listen to the universe or whoever or whatever the first time. And it was interesting, like winning, not to toot my own horn, but says, as an example, this can happen to anyone, IBM Employee of the Year. And then a couple of years later, laid off, corporate downsizing, or moving jobs, or moving them back here, or doing this, or shutting down your division. Took a year off, the summer of James, traveled the world, lived the summer of the cottage, and then went back to the corporate world almost 4 years later. You know, calling me, congratulations, James, you've won the awards club, you've won President's Club, amazing work, you blew your numbers away, you did this and that this year, great work. And I said, great, well, when is it? Well, they said, well, we're going to give you money instead of letting you come to the awards events. I said, why? I want to go down Lake Tahoe, have some fun, see my colleagues. He's like, well, because actually today is your last day here with us. What? So congratulations and goodbye. It was almost comical. I'm like, are you being serious? He's like, yeah, I am. I'm like, okay. I mean, great. And it was like I won the lottery almost, Joanne, because I wasn't happy. I wanted out of there. I made great money, but I was depressed. I was anxious. I wasn't happy with my life. Unfortunately, I think that's a lot of people these days. Yeah. So how's work? Oh, it sucks, but it pays the bills. Or work's work, or it's there and work's okay. Or I live for the weekends, or some permutation of that, which breaks my heart. So that's, you know, I thought after the second layoff, I started to pay attention to the nudges from the universe. I'm like, okay, it's a sign. So then started my own business. I always knew I loved to help people. Started doing a few things and now found my way here to what I really love doing, to empowering people, teaching, speaking, and leading.
That's a fascinating story. So much of that resonates with me in that, find that epiphany moment where you realize what this corporate machine is all about, and it's never about you, is it? That's the problem. You think you're the key pillar. You think you're driving strategy. You're right in there. And then in a blink, you're irrelevant. And it's like, hang on a minute. I was person of the year.
And it's a shame that, I suppose that's one thing I love to help organizations with, because when people feel like numbers, they're going to be disengaged. They're going to be on this thing all day or social media or actively distracted when they feel like numbers, they feel like not they're valuable. They're just there to push buttons. They can be replaced at any time. They may just will be. When people feel that way, it harms corporate culture. It harms everything. When people feel like nothing, disposable, worthless, just a number, they can go in a blink of an eye. You know, and it's ironic. Our parents always say, yo, find a stable job, get a good, reliable job. I don't think that exists these days, unless you have your own business. I don't think that exists in life anymore, as I learned and you learned in the blink of an eye. And that's why I do love, you know, with teaching leaders, just how to have people feel like people, because they'll do so much better. They'll go so much further. They'll go way above and beyond when you're an awesome leader and you treat people like people and really take care of them. Yes, it takes a little extra time, air quotes. However, it actually in the long run saves you immense time, because people aren't leaving. You don't have to retrain people. People get greater results, greater satisfaction, absenteeism, greater performance on the job, greater productivity. So actually, it saves money, saves time in the long run by spending a little more time making sure your people are great and give them what they need.
Yeah, I do a lot of work with the middle managers, senior managers. I wouldn't say board level, but those people aspiring. And too often I'm on these calls listening to what they're saying, and I feel that they've drunk the corporate Kool-Aid, or whatever the phrase is, where they believe if they keep trying, keep their head down, keep pushing, they'll be recognized, they'll be spotted. And then there's a change of management, and then suddenly they find they've got to start again. They've got to re-brown nose, whatever word you want to use.
Yeah, exactly. Someone brings in their best friend. Exactly. You're right. It happened. I've seen it happen many times. Not cut you off, but you're right. You know, someone's next in line. They're just about there. You get promoted, but then they get sick, or someone dies, or someone leaves, or someone gets hired out, or retires, or whatever, and or downsized. And then you're right. Then the new exec brings all his own people, her own people, and their own people in, and where you were, I'm literally almost the walk at the tip of the mountain. Well, you got to climb all the way back up that mountain to is it brown nose your way up or lead your way up or prove your way up?
Yeah. But that's the learned behavior, isn't it? It's if you get knocked back down 6 levels, you go back to your learned behavior, which is how to climb back. And I often say to these people, what do you think is going to be different this time?
Fair.
And they go, I said, well, isn't it time to just admit that you need a new strategy? You need to attack this from a different way. You need to change jobs, change companies, go on your own, or be more strategic internally. And then I've mentored these people over years, and they come back and it happened again. I said, okay, so what have we learned this time?
What's different to last time?
And their learned behavior is get back on the same rungs and do the same again and keep trying.
I guess it better work harder, work later, show more, brown nose the same. Versus, you're right, changing your strategy there, changing. There was a saying, I don't know who came up with it, might have been me, but if you want to raise, want to raise a promotion, go work for a new company versus, begging for a little, small little raise at a current company. Go work for a new company. Say, I'm amazing. This is my experience. If you want me, this is what my price is to have me. Versus begging and clamoring at a current company and been there, done that for a small raise when you're doing so much,
We've seen examples of very famous people who've started out as the janitor and ended up as the CEO or whatever. We see that, but there are only a handful of these people in the world, and they write the books and they tell the story.
Well, exactly.
The reality is, for most people, it's not, as you say, you're better off thinking a different tactic, because I always find that you get anchored to your starting point. You're always seen as an apprentice, always seen as an intern, always seen as a junior. And the people around you keep growing around you, and they always see you 5 levels below. So you've got to come in at a higher level and have people perceive you differently. And that's a real challenge for people to escape that mindset.
I think you're right, especially when peers, and I've seen it too, peers, one gets promoted and they're now the leader, the manager, the supervisor, and their buddy or just their peers are like, well, I'm not listening to you. You're just one of me. I'm not listening to, and it causes a lot of issues. And then often that leader fails unless they find a way to make it work, or unless they're moved to a totally different team. Or again, if they go to a totally different company as a leader, that can work better. But you're right. If they just promoted to a leader of their peers, it's like, oh, it's just John. It's just Jane. Whatever, they don't really see them as an absolute authority. So it's super, super interesting to see that as well, unless they are moved to a dramatically new team or company.
Yeah, I got out of the corporate life in the 90s. I used to work for a private bank in the city of London, global private bank. And I remember I had this fantastic job. I was in IT computing at the time. I used to be head of global systems. So I used to deploy PCs and servers, Novell NetWare, actually, as it happened.
There we go.
Yeah, around the world. They did a big reorg, and then they gave me this new job, which was responsible for year 2000 compliance in the DEC VAX systems, the VAX VMS systems, the Novell NetWare, all the PCs. So I was now, and I got a letter from the IT director saying, basically, if you mess up, your bonus is on the line. And I read this, and I thought, I don't want the job. I loved my old job. The job I applied for was the one I had. I loved that job. Really loved it. And I wanted to keep doing it. And secondly, I don't want to be spoken that way. I don't want to be. I remember handing my notice in. The HR director took me in and sort of sat there. You could see he was fuming and angry because to work for a bank, there's a lot of due diligence. It probably took them 6 months worth of due diligence to hire me. And that, I'd only been there like 18 months or something. So as far as they're concerned, they thought I had their life. And I just went, I'm sorry, I'm out. I'm going to start my own business. I don't need this anymore. And I never looked back. Yeah, at the time, I had a good salary. And I thought, wow, what am I doing here? And so when I say to people, sometimes you've got to make that choice. And I know it's a privilege. It's a privilege to be able to have that choice. Not everybody has that. But you can always hide behind it and say, I can't.
And because sometimes of XYZ, my family, my money, my this, my that, it's, I don't know how. I agreed. It's really interesting to see, and I've seen it with people too. They're a great, let's say, great sales rep, great leader, but a horrible company. And I'm like, leave, go to a new company. But I guess unfortunately, they pay them quite well because they know they treat them poorly. They pay them quite well at these companies I've seen, just enough to keep them there. Because they're like, well, if I go anywhere else, I wouldn't make as much, which I think is a limiting belief. It's a bit true because they do pay them well, so they can abuse them, so they don't leave. But also, like, she's like, well, this is what I do. I sell this, right? I lead this type of company. Well, could you not sell that or lead that type of company? And their thoughts are, well, no, this is all I know how to sell. This is all. No, leadership skills, sales skills, or people skills, relationship skills, they're cross. You could work for, you could sell bread or spaceships. It's people skills. It's asking questions. It's talking to people, leading, it's understanding people, making people feel human and engaging people. Those beliefs or excuses, like you said, I can't because blank is in there.
I can't get married. I can't start a family. I can't buy a house. I can't because.
Yeah.
And the other thing this bank did was that their bonus culture, they paid a really good banker's bonus, as most banks do and other companies, is that you got the bonus, but you got awarded it, but you didn't get it for another 3 or 4 months afterwards. So therefore, you're always earning the next bonus before you got the last bonus. So you're always in arrears. So you always had 3 or 4 months if you left.
If you leave, you lose, basically. That's really interesting.
Basically, you've already started investing in the next year. You put, I'm not sure whether you lost the entire bonus for what you had, but there was this kind of like, well, I've already invested another 4 months before I had it, sort of thing. It's like, again, it sucks you in. Deliberate, very deliberate. But I remember those days. You mentioned, you know, you started back in the Novell Netware, Microsoft. And I go back to, I suppose, my first IT job was 1984. IBM PCs, HP Vectras at the time, floppy disks, first Apple Mac, the little tiny portable Apple Mac thing. And I remember those days. It was very, you know, we talk about iOS versus Android today, this the battle of the platforms. In those days, we had IBM, the big monolith, and Microsoft, the upstart coming in. Then we had different versions of DOS. Then we had Windows. We had OS 2. We had Novell Netware. And all these people became very, you could see how people were becoming really invested in their tech and their specialists. I look back on that and think, when we talk about culture and inclusion and diversity, all these sort of things, people were very prisoners to their tech stack, didn't they? And whatever goes around comes around. Novell Netware died like everything else. Microsoft Phone died. IBM changed its model completely.
True, completely. Exactly. Lots of services now, you know, and software, less hardware, lots of service. It's interesting to think when things change, because change is the only constant. And that's why I think we need to learn that perseverance, that resilience during, again, times of challenge, change, adversity, because that's the only thing that we can really rely on these days, is that there will be change. Is that things are going to get shaken up? Is it tomorrow? With Trump tariffs, is it 2 years from now with another war? Is it whatever it is, economy up and down and all around? But to your point, I think we need to also change people's thinking and get rid of the I can't, or that's going to cost too much, or it'll be too hard or too long or too whatever, or not enough, whatever. Because then nothing changes. And then inevitably, like Kodak, they invented the digital camera, but they buried it in a vault because they're like, well, no, this is going to cannibalize all our film sales. This is a bad idea. So let's not do it. We'll hide it. And then now Kodak's out of business. Blockbuster's the same. No, let's not do this online thing because then people are not going to come in our stores and buy our things. It's going to wreck it. But inevitably, now Blockbuster's out of business. And there's millions of examples like that. The people that didn't adapt to change, or nope, we're not changing, and they stand firm. And because change is the only thing that's going to happen that you know is going to happen. And I think that the resilience and, again, perseverance. Okay, well, that didn't work. Let's try that. This didn't work. Let's try that. And okay, this is happening. Let's try this.
Yeah.
And that's why perseverance and inclusion can be such great and hot topics these days.
Yeah, because when I had my own IT business, we're just at that cusp from on-premises servers to cloud. And we were a break-fix sort of service provider where we wanted things to break. We wanted hardware to go wrong. And then the world was moving very quickly into a cloud-based 5 nines, reliable, doesn't go down. So trying to pivot the skill set and the business model to being a managed service all in. And inevitably, that's a kind of a cliff edge because you've got to invest for no return, then hope to grow that element. And your customers aren't always ready for it either, are they?
Yeah, fair. And take that risk, like you said. You know, you live on that edge. And I think fate favors the fearless. You go all in intelligently, but you go all in. And I think fate can favor you versus we're going to wait, we're going to hesitate, or we're going to take the slow, we're not going to do that, or burying our head in things, I think can be a very, very dangerous thing, but for business, for success, and for growth, honestly. It's like, well, how can we be changing? If things are changing, the world is changing, how can we constantly be changing and evolving ourselves? Which is what I suppose led me to be where I am now. I'm constantly learning, constantly growing with courses, mentors, trainings, you name it. I think that is for me anyways, it's something that's been to help me become the man I am, the leader I am, but also as fulfilling it is and creating the success, going back to our title, it's creating that success is by planning to change, planning for change and having almost a change and growth roadmap for yourself and for your team. Otherwise, you're literally falling down the mountain versus climbing up the mountain because someone's got a rocket pack and they're going to rocket up the mountain ahead of you or whatever metaphor you want to use. I think it's very important to have that forthright vision and to be able to handle the bumps in the road too, because there will be some and they can be the greatest learnings and sometimes the brightest spots or highlight the bumps in the road. I find can highlight your brightest stars in the business, in the company too. Your brightest employees, the brightest spots, the best people, because if they stick around and stand strong and say, what can I do? How do you need me? And they take responsibility for things. I think that can reveal some of your best people that you want to keep around forever. That's for sure.
Yeah. In those times of stress and challenge, isn't it? That's where the spotlight, the shine, is people who can handle that adversity. It's growth mindset. It's solution mindset rather than learned behaviors, rather than rigid structure. Yes, you tell me right. What to do. I need to be managed.
I give up. Yeah, exactly. I don't know what to do. Yeah. Yeah, right on.
But businesses need a blend. I mean, going back to this diversity of personality type, if everybody was a go-getty idea person, you'd have no, keep the show on the road stuff. You'd have no operations. You'd be changing everything every 5 seconds and everyone's got a better idea. It's trying to find that blend, isn't it?
I think you're right. And it is. And supporting everyone's spark, I think, because you're right. We need technical people. We need visionary people. We need people, relationship people, all these kind of things. And yeah, it's that making sure that balance is there, because you want more than one type of person on your team and people that compliment you as well, but also finding their spark, finding what lights them up, supporting that, because then they'll stay, they'll do better, they'll be excited. So, you know, helping them find that spark, because some people don't know what it is or they don't want to let it out for whatever reason, being seen or judged or heard or hated on or whatever. I think there's this internal conflict. People want to be seen and heard for their authentic, you know, value and who they are, but also then the fears of what if I speak up and people don't like it, or if they fire me, or they think I'm stupid or whatever, whatever it is, or I ruffle some feathers. And my biggest thing is be authentic. And if you're authentic and being real, and it's not permission to be an ass, but it's you know, being raw and real and yes, sharing your opinions, share your thoughts, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're someone at a corporate firm. And if you get fired for being authentic and being real and the kind person, then it's not the firm for you. Or if you're afraid that you're going to get fired or thinking you're fired for being real and authentic, well, A, it's often just a limiting belief or a fear. An unfounded fear. And again, like I said, if you do get laid off or fired, you're probably not happy there anyways. I can almost bet my reputation on the fact that you're not happy and fulfilled there anyways. If you can't be you and speak up or speak out and contribute, or they're not letting you shine your light, sounds a little airy-fairy, but they're not letting you show your bright spots and really what lights you up, what you're passionate about, because that's going to make you the most productive, you know, a leader, team member, mentor, friend, you name it.
You talked right at the beginning around growing, making mistakes, failing quick, learning fast. And some of that goes back to what you talk about, this fear is this concept of psychological safety, isn't it? You know, making sure we can bring ourselves into the workplace, we can learn and grow, and we can make mistakes. Because as you said, how many children do you know that learn to walk without falling over, without bumping their head, without grazing their knee?
Exactly.
It doesn't happen, does it? You have to... If you get it right every time, you don't know what the magic sauce was to get it right.
Exactly.
It's only when you make a misstep that you suddenly learn, course correct, learned. Don't do that again. Yeah. It hurts if I do that.
Well, and that's what you're right. That's what sometimes people with just pure natural talent, coincidentally, sometimes they're not very good teachers, because they're like, well, you just do it like I do. And you're like, what? Like, what are you talking about? So sometimes it's ironic that sometimes that the true natural talent, if it was easy for them, it's not easy for most people, so they often don't make a great teacher. Now, that doesn't always hold fast and hold true, but they're like, because they didn't know what it was like to fail and to fall, and watch out for this or don't do that. And when you're driving your bike, heaven forbid, don't do that with your steering wheel, because you're going to fall, versus someone that just jumped on a bike and naturally, well, this is pretty easy, and, you know, they had a lot of really good balance and it was easy to them. You know, just get on and start riding. That's all you do. And you're falling over. You're like, I don't understand this. I don't get it. But no, you're coming back to your point. It is really interesting. I like to throw rocks at culture, a corporate culture that makes it not okay to fail, not okay to take risk, not okay to try, not okay to contribute and say something that people are like, well, we don't agree with that, or we'll take that and pause that, or no, yes, no, maybe. I think, that the corporate culture that punishes failing and rewards the monotony robot-like employee, which is not going to give you the highest performance you want, and they're not going to be happy either because humans are not robots. I think that can be a very dangerous culture that punishes or just says failure is bad, trying things is bad, risk is bad. But it's not. It's how, if the Wright brothers didn't risk falling, we would never have fly.
They obviously crashed a lot of times. You just don't see the footage.
Exactly. They sure did. In fact, I think it was Wilbur Wright, about a year before they got the first flying airplane. He said, man will not fly for thousands of years because they were using traditional outdated thinking, science, models, research. And they said, let's throw all that out and let's do our own research thinking. But let's look at a fresh view of this flight thing. And then again, a year later, they had a flying airplane versus years of crashing and falling and not working because they were using someone else's limitations, limiting beliefs, models, fears, worries. This can happen. This can't happen. This is possible. This is not possible. All that stuff. It's amazing how things. One of the founders of IBM once said, "Computers are just not that practical. We may have a few of them in the world, maybe at libraries and universities, but no one needs a computer in their home. What are they going to do with it? I have literally on my desk four of them right now. One, two, three, and then four. It's been exactly. That's exactly. You have one on your arm. You wear a computer.
Yeah, it's insane. I've got them in my ears. These things have got sound Fair processing enough. Up in my headphones."
Exactly. It's
more
just
processing power than the Apollo spaceships, probably in my ears.
Correct. Exactly. Probably all the computing power in literally '80s and beyond is probably in my phone right now. The 80s, every computer back to, I guess, what, 50s when ENIAC and the other one was invented, probably sits in my phone. All the computing power in the world in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. So it's just interesting, you know?
Doesn't some of this thinking allow a massive hole in the concept of the meritocracy, this belief and the BS of meritocracy?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I saw something on LinkedIn. It was an article. I can't remember what it was. But the concept was basically A-grade students don't make the best leaders and entrepreneurs because the C-grade students know what it's like to work hard and fail. They know how to create. But A-grade students tend to have an aptitude to get things right, and they focus on getting things right. Oh, and they get really frustrated when they get it wrong, but they believe they're right. And the meritocracy is often geared up for the A graders, not the School of Hard Knocks or the Triers. Yeah, I don't want to quote the name, but Trump, he's messed up a lot in his life. He's yes. made a lot of mistakes. I dare say Musk has as well. And these big people that you can credit. Let's talk about the meritocracy. The meritocracy comes from a life of hard knocks and the attrition. Not just being that snapshot, that veneer of being great.
True. And there's the Dunning-Kruger effect, which people that they think they're naturally, they think they're people that have some skill, think they're actually better than they are. And I think to your point, that happens a lot with those, the A-graders, if you will. In fact, we had to let someone go. We onboarded someone recently, let her go in a few days, 131 IQ, a very nice person, but just it didn't work. Without putting her down, it 130. You very smart person, but some of the basic stuff, it's like, what? It's and there's been many times, many of those people too. I've been hired many bright people and it didn't work out because it just many reasons. Either you're right, Dunning-Kruger effect, think they're better than what they are, or just they know School of Hard Knocks. No, well, what do I do if this happens? What do I do if this breaks? Versus, okay, I can't do anything till I ask James. Well, what would you do? What might you do? What could you do right now instead of waiting till I'm available to ask me, okay, this is broken. What do I do? So it is really interesting, Joanne, to see those, like I said, and I hate how the current school system, I have several problems with it. I think it creates robots and designs people to be automatons in a industrial world, corporate world, I suppose. But not even successful corporate people, because the corporate world still needs great thinkers, great innovators, people who go above and beyond and think outside the box versus just do what you're told. Now, there's obviously some people in the corporate world that do that, but there's a lot of people, sit down, raise your hand, ask permission if you want a water, one in the bathroom. Seriously, and having little boys sit down, behave, shut up, when I don't think little 3-, 4-, 5-year-old boys should be made to sit down and shut up. That's not how they're designed. I mean, it's. Anyways, I have several problems with the school systems these days, But again, one of them is just that it doesn't really teach people to be, you know, outside the box thinkers and go above and beyond and just be super creative versus, okay, 2 + 2 = 4. Great. On a test, let's write 2. But versus how can you be creative? How can you solve problems and look at things and think abstractly? I unfortunately loathe some of the current school systems and how they teach because of that and what you just said.
Yeah, we've got to meet people where they're at sometimes. In today's world, we recognize people have different learning, different thinking styles, neurotypical, neurodivergent thinking styles. And we go back to the school years when I was 1970s, where you were put in the class for people who were useless, for want of a better phrase of putting it. You were written off and you got nothing. You were allowed to, I don't know, play games and draw with crayons. That was about your lot at school. And now we're recognizing that by meeting people where they're at and their style, people can thrive and fly.
Huge, huge, huge. I'm neurodiverse too. I'm OCD and ADHD. And thank goodness I wasn't diagnosed until I was in my last year of university. Because like, who knows what box I would have put in or what SPED group I would have been put in or God knows what, how I would have been looked at. Because again, these notions with teachers, oh, he's this, he's that, she's this, she's that, or not this, not that. It made it hella hard for me to go through school. And again, certain subjects I got great marks in because the ADHD can help you hyper-focus and be just hyper, super interested and excel in certain things that you love and you're interested. And then, of course, it can make it extremely hard. Math is one of mine to excel in something that you're no interest, you're bored at, and you become not good at it. Luckily, in most of our careers or our entrepreneur worlds, we can outsource and hire out. And we do what we love as entrepreneurs. So luckily, it's an amazing superpower. If there's any young people out there or even people in the corporate world that have whatever neurodivergent you are, OCD, ADHD, or whatever you are, go find somewhere where you love working and maybe go start your own business and doing things you love. If there's any kids listening, avoid worrying. You'll find your superpower and go out and do that and avoid letting anyone tell you, you can't because blank. You can't because this, you can't because of that. I met a gentleman, homeless-ish person. And I said, well, you know, what are you doing? How'd you become homeless? He's like, well, I was in the military and he's like, but I hurt my leg and he's like, so I can't work. And I'm like, there's like hours or half days I don't get off my ass in a given day that I don't get off my butt. And this, it was so interesting to me and bizarre, but interesting that his belief, I can't work because there's a million things he could do with having a bad leg. But again, just not it just in his realm of and just of thinking outside the box and what he's been taught. It was fascinating to me, and it broke my heart too.
Anyone who's at school today or in that sort of teenage college looking to think about their career, they've got to start thinking 10 years ahead because I think the phrase is "skate where the puck's going, not where the puck
right
is."
Right on, Wayne Gretzky, good Canadian.
You wind the clock back. I don't know, let's say four or five years, AI. Would anyone say, hang on a minute, we want to be investing in AI big time? Everybody needs to invest in AI big time. But you go, don't know what you're talking about,
what
AI.
What reason is exactly?
It's science fiction. Don't need it.
Like, try to talk about the Terminator movie, you know?
Exactly. You know, when I was at leaving school, nobody wanted to be a social media expert in the 1980s. Nobody wanted to be a LinkedIn trainer, a social selling person, Deliveroo. Food delivery person or a Just Eat person, these technologies didn't exist. You don't have to aspire to what is the incumbent vogue, if you like. What's happening now is looking where that puck's going and thinking to yourself, I see here. Maybe I need to build a trajectory and get some skills, but you've got to be agile. You've got to keep looking at the horizon.
Agreed. Wayne Gretzky, skate where the puck's going, because you're right. What is a trend? What are emerging trends? What could I get into versus, you know, what is it? What is a business that may not be there? What is a job type in the future that may not be there in the future because of AI or automation or robots or whatever? You know, I think look at, okay, what could I do? What would I love to do? What would light me up? Pretending that anything was possible but for people that maybe that's not quite their realm yet, pretending that anything is possible, what would you do? What could you do? What would you love to do? And either maybe find someone like that, find a bunch of people like that. I mean, that's what the creators of Google did. They like, let's build this thing together, or go create it yourself, or find a company that is doing that. or maybe getting into that, and you can help them develop it too. And I mean, my goodness, that would light me up as well. So I think it would light people up too.
I mean, let's think, a year ago, would anybody have said that Google could be displaced as a search engine? Is that possible?
You know?
OpenAI come out and say, right, you can now use AI to search. You don't need rankings and keywords. It won't even return your website. Perplexity, it'll do all this research for you. And suddenly, search engines are becoming irrelevant because it's all proportionate to the effort you put into the search. Now you can just say, tell me how to make a cake. What sort of cake do you want? I want this sort of cake. Oh, this is how you do it. This is the recipe.
Sugar free. Yeah, exactly.
And if you need a new oven, buy this one. I just think I know people are scared of this, but people were scared of the motor car. People were scared of steam engines. How do we tame it without creating Skynet, I guess, is the key thing.
Well, and that's the other thing too. Exactly. But without creating Skynet, but also without, it's funny you say that, without also thinking, I'm trying to remember a quote. I can't remember who it was, but they're like, oh, these car things, this is just a fad. The horse has always been there. The horse and carriage will always be there. It's the way we do it. These cars are going to be just a fad, and they're dangerous, and they're smelly, and they're smoggy. And I mean, that's probably true, but and then, you know, we our cars are dominant transportation now. It's so interesting that the thinking that happens and the limited thinking, but to your point exactly, I think you're absolutely right.
And the first cars were electric, weren't they? They weren't petrol or steam operated. There was a lot of electric ones. So yeah, we're coming around again. Someone had a vested interest in fossil fuels to obviously sell them to make petrol.
Sure. A lot of vested interest. Yes.
So we talk about the entrepreneurial spirit and the mindset here. You know, we've introduced escape where the puck's going, looking at opportunities, looking around in your business, not stagnating or become the blockbuster and all over our network or something. Yes. As an entrepreneur, you have to A, run your business, B, think of the future, lifelong learning, but you've got to reserve some time for you, haven't you? How do you stop yourself burning out? We've talked about balance and freedom here.
Yeah.
How to be balanced.
It's huge, and it's so important. I burned out many times in my corporate career. I've seen people burn out, employees and leaders. I burnt out my entrepreneur business too, because there's got to be balance. And when there's not, people don't perform well. Burnt out people are not high performers. No wonder there's all so much absenteeism these days, or depression, or sick leave, or stress leave, or whatever people leave for. I think you're right. People don't have boundaries with themselves and others to make sure. And I used to do this too. I can talk to you during my lunch hours. I'll just move this appointment, we'll book us in, I'll just delete my lunch. That doesn't happen anymore. No, my lunch is this time. My free time, flow time is no, you're not. Nope. I mean, if something's an emergency I'll shift that. But if it's a day that there's no other time to take a break, you're not getting in my lunch hour. You're not getting in my nap time, you know? And I think that's important as almost our culture, which I also throw rocks at, the culture in North America, hopefully definitely less in Europe and South America. Maybe I'm not sure about the UK, but our culture is the whole work. And whoever works the most or the hardest wins, which I think can actually lead to failure. It's whoever works the most effectively, the most efficiently, the most creatively. And while they you know, inspire others, empower others, lead others to success, that's who wins, not just work, or work harder. That person in the earliest, the office and out the latest, and had little people bragging about how little sleep they have. How about we brag about with success or how much you got done in how little time versus, and I did this too. I was there. Oh, I only slept, 5 hours last night because I worked 18 hours last night and blah, 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 blah. All that nonsense. No wonder there's so much burnout and depression and suicide too. And again, been there, done that. Suicidal thoughts, depression, anxiety, all this stuff, which came from, yes, intense bullying and being picked on physically and mentally for years, but also just killing myself, burning myself out, wanting to look good for others, wanting so hard for people to like me, being so inauthentic, it just fries us. So just tying into the theme here of self-care and burnout, some of that is yes, meditating, reflection, what's working in your life, what's not working, because that'll make you reflect and help you grow. When you reflect and there's action and reflection, there's progress. No reflection, no progress. You're just on that treadmill going without realizing, why are the trees not moving? Oh, I'm in a freaking treadmill. I'm just running my hardest, but not going anywhere. That's why the trees aren't moving by. I think people need to really take stock about, taking breaks and being okay taking breaks, being okay taking vacation. Not one of these people that, I don't take any vacation, or I don't take breaks, or I haven't taken vacation in years. That's not helping you be a high performer. and it's not helping you think creatively. I mean, Einstein, Henry Ford, Edison, all the greats have said, you know, even Oprah Winfrey, even Huffington, Martha Stewart, even, I know she's a bit out of favor now, but they've all said that all the greats of the years have all said that my greatest ahas and creativity and awareness moments and moments of generating ideas and solutions came when I was resting or doing something else or doing self-care and doing something else, not when I was in the middle of the thing. So, and I experience that daily too, because I make darn sure this time for me to play, to meditate, how whatever your meditation is, or going for a walk, it could be thinking, it could be not thinking, whatever your practice is, listening to music, just chilling, whatever it is, enjoying, I don't know, sitting, enjoying my thing often before I develop an allergy to chocolate, with just sitting and just, you know, letting bites of chocolate dissolve in my mouth and just taking a few moments and just like those Bueno commercials or Aero commercials or whatever it is. I think we need that time. I know we need that time. And I've seen myself and people that don't take some, whatever the time is, maybe it's to go for a run. It's different for it's different for all of us. You don't have to go for a run. Maybe it's just going for a walk or sitting and doing nothing or dreaming or thinking or playing. Time to have fun too. Never, and that's a whole other thing, but at least time for self-care. Maybe it's a massage. Maybe it's whatever it is. As an entrepreneur, I don't have health benefits because I'm an entrepreneur, but you're darn right, I pay for weekly massages. That's one of my biggest self-cares. And sometimes it's twice a week because that's why does that ever charge me? Wow, does it ever charge me? I think we need to have that, whatever that is, whatever you do, and that's fine. If it's sitting and closing your eyes for half an hour or an hour, 20 minutes, I used to take naps. I'd go to a small, at far edge of the floor, a breakout room, and put my chair against the wall, and I just would nap. For 15, 20, I'd come back a totally new man, totally new person. But I think so many people are so worried about getting enough done that no lunches, no breaks, and they actually don't realize that that causes them to work later and to be less effective as they work later, because there's, after 35 hours, there's a decline in performance. After, I think it's 45 or 46 or 50, I might be getting the studies wrong. It just nosedives productivity. And then after, I think it's 50 hours, you're getting less done. You're actually less done than you did if you worked less than 50 hours. So anyways, end of rant. Self-care, people, please. But it's mandatory. It's not optional.
I read another story somewhere. I'm going to give my version of interpretation of it. If you want to create a process or change or get someone to investigate something, give it to a lazy person. Because a lazy person is more likely to find an optimal solution rather than someone who is trying to overthink and overcommit and create all these permutations. The lazy person will find the optimal, least effort solution, which is sometimes what you want.
Very true. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard the other saying, if you want something done quick, give it to a busy person because they'll be on it, get it done. And to your point, if you want something changed or a new way of going, yes, give it to a lazy person because, well, horses weren't fast enough. What would be faster than horses? Oh, cars. Cars are faster. And then what would be faster than cars? Oh, maybe we'll be rocketing through tubes or something. You know, in the next 5, 10, 20, 40, 80 years, we'll just rocket through tubes back and forth. But yeah, exactly. Being lazy. How do we get there faster? How do we do this? How do we do this easier? Well, let's have a fridge that opens itself and, like, I don't know, hands you a soda or something or brings it to you in the living room.
I kind of had, when I was in my IT days, I kind of had this kind of mental subroutine that used to say to me, am I going to do this more than once? Am I going to do this many times? In which case, it's a subroutine. It's something that I need to create a boilerplate. I need to create a template. I need to be able to pick a package up and modify it, not do it time and time and time again. And as coders, as programmers, you have snippets and code blocks you just paste in.
Yeah.
And I think people who haven't had maybe that sort of upbringing don't understand that, you know, the duplicate and copy and edit. Okay, now in today's technology, right click duplicate, right click copy is de facto, but it wasn't in the old days. Yeah,
no,
pre-technology.
It's totally true. And I think too, especially for entrepreneurs or even people in a corporate environment that make a suggestion, hey, I'm doing this multiple times a day. How do we automate this? How do we outsource this? How do we turn this into a process or a computer subroutine or AI it or whatever? Because we're just doing the doing. And I think people, there's a limiting belief. It just takes you a few minutes. It's not a big deal. But you do a few minutes 1,000 times, you get several thousand hours, which is several weeks worth of lost productivity, I think, if I'm calculating. You know, it's So I tell whether it's entrepreneurs or leaders, look what your team is doing or look what you are doing over and over again, even if it doesn't take that long. Anything you touch twice or do twice or thrice or 1,000 times, yes, it'll take a little more time to automate or outsource or whatever, change or whatever, get a system for that. But maybe it takes 5, 10, 20 times the amount of time than to just do it yourself. But after that, the next 1,000,000 repetitions are going to save you hundreds and maybe thousands of hours. So like you said, Joanne, it's exactly the case. It's exactly, yeah.
Push the button. The button and watch it happen. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's why
there's AI watching that there's no even button. It just happens. No even button pushing. It happens eventually. Yeah. You're right. And we're there now.
A Chrome extension will do that for you. Yeah,
exactly.
Out there.
Yeah, it's cheap or free and easy. And I think to give people more interesting, more creative tasks as well is a way to grow people, give them more time to play. I mean, some of the best companies in the world give their employees an hour a day or a few hours a week to play and make things and break things versus, no, you got to be pushing buttons all day long. And I think that's a mistake. That's a big mistake, I think, to do.
I think the other side of that is there's also a personal fulfillment in creativity.
Yeah.
That kind of thing you're talking about there is the equivalent of a blank sheet of paper and a crayon for a five-year-old. Draw me a picture. Just scribbles, whatever it may be. Your brain needs to go into scribble mode, doesn't it? And just play with stuff. And I think that's what we need to recognize for ourselves as entrepreneurs. We need to scribble. My problem is, probably a bit like your brain, is I've constantly got these shiny things coming towards me. I want to play with that. I want to play with that. I want to do some e-learning. I want to develop my book. I want to write this and I want to do that. I got myself a drone for my 60th birthday last month. And I've got this drone in the box. I think I need to go out and fly that. And I want to do that. And I want to do that. So I've got all these shiny objects around me and it's trying to find the one that I can get to today.
Fair.
I'm always learning, always trying to develop skills. If you look at my YouTube, I'll spend 50 hours on YouTube on a topic and I'll suck it to death. I'll absorb it all. It's a bit like, what's that spoof sci-fi film where the you have the brain monster, it sucks your brains out, doesn't it?
I know what you mean.
Space Cowboys, was it? Or something like that?
I think you're right. Space Cowboys, you're right.
Something
the brain
like
monster that, well, exactly.
The brain monster. I feel like I'm doing that. I'm sucking all this knowledge out of YouTube. And then another shiny thing will come along. I'm going to spend another 50 hours sucking the information out of there. Maybe it's more like the Matrix where you're plugging the Apache helicopter module into your neck and downloading the pilot mode.
Your helicopter pilot. And it's interesting, too, because all this goes back to I guess, our theme of perseverance, of resilience, of growth, of success as well. Because I think when we're learning, and everyone is going to say, don't have time to read a book, don't have time to learn, and I think gently I would invite people to call themselves on that and call themselves out, because if you're on this thing all day, or if you're scrolling at night or desk scrolling, or if you're watching, I don't watch TV, but if you're watching any amount of TV a day, not to say don't play, definitely have time, have fun, whatever your thing is, but at least, you know, maybe take half an hour, 40 minutes a day, less TV or less doom scrolling or whatever, and invest, you know, whether it's YouTube, whether it's books, whether it's whatever, invest. Now, YouTube, you can go down rabbit holes. That's why some of these books are great, and books will help you sleep more than doom scrolling on YouTube at 1 a.m. But find even 20, 10 minutes a day to read, 20 minutes, whatever you want, 40, whatever you want, an hour, 5 minutes even. Turn a few pages, because in a year, you're going to have one or three books done versus none. So I think that all this we're talking about ties back in a theme of perseverance and resilience. And growth and success, because I think if people are growing ahead of you, when people are growing ahead of you, and to your point that getting that job, getting that C-suite, getting promoted, or if it's an entrepreneur, you know, getting the new customers or being seen as different and unique, and why people should buy you versus people buying someone else. That education, that research, never mind just telling people, hey, you know, I read 10 books a week type thing. It sounds pretty great. Or I read one book a week, or whatever it is. It you know, I'm always learning. Whatever however you explain it to people, that sounds great too. I want to learn from someone who's always learning. I don't want to learn from someone who never learns or never picks up a book or researches a topic or a new topic or never plays. That's not someone I want to learn from. I think that contributes to our success too, based on by going back to our theme.
Yeah, one of the things you said it's part of what you do, and I think the word freedom was in there.
Yes,
and I often reflect on that word. What does freedom mean to me? It means freedom of choice, freedom of this, freedom of that. It means I'm not dependent on someone else, something else. Sustainable business, sustainable income, sustainable food source, heating, lighting, housing. So we take freedom for granted because when we get ill or sick or poorly, we start to lose that agency, don't we? Because then we're now, what we thought was freedom was just short-lived. And one thing I realized 5 years ago, probably, that I was approaching my 60th and I thought, hang on a minute, I want to be able to keep going until I'm 75.
Heck yeah.
Really. Maybe. I can't wait until I'm 70 to make that choice. So I realized I was investing in my business, marketing, branding, consulting, computing, all this kind of stuff. But I wasn't investing in me and I was the core cog in my business. So for me, when I talk about freedom, I need to make sure that my health and well-being and fitness is part of that freedom model and not just money. It's also the ability to enjoy that money.
It's what, and exactly. I mean, look, so many, as you know, so many people retire, you know, save. Our parents say, save your money for retirement, get a good stable job, save your money for retirement. And in retirement, most people can't do anything, depending on how old you retire, right? Or what you do or how well or not you do, especially if you haven't taken care of yourself. You usually can't, you know, hike mountains and travel the world if you haven't taken care of yourself in your retirement. But yeah, to your point, and I've been there. I still got the stretch marks right here from when I was clinically obese and you know, yeah, suffering from chronic fatigue and just exhaustion and burnout and not being able to lose weight and all these things, brain fog, you know, just constant fatigue, cloudy thinking. And then now to living how I am now, yes, I love food. Yes, I have treats as well. But it's just that being healthy, exercising, living healthy, however that looks to someone. You don't have to go to the gym if you don't want to. You don't have to do whatever. But I think that it's important to find whether it's soccer or whether it's jumping up and down or skipping or martial arts or gym or running or walking. Walking is one of the best forms of exercise. It actually burns a higher percentage of fat. It just takes a little longer. So if you want to walk, then walk for an hour and 20. Not that a half hour walk is not great for you, but in terms of walk for an hour or run for 25 minutes, it's a choice. But again, whatever people do, I think is fine. They don't have to do, you know, join a circuit training or a dance class or whatever the exercise and eat better. I've learned that eating and diet is a huge, huge thing, even to the point of where certain foods still will make me exhausted, will make me depressed, anxious foods, and will affect our mental health huge. You know, when I eat properly, I eat well. Again, I snack and treat once in a while, of course. You got to enjoy life, like maybe 90% healthy, 10%, you know, snacks. Even to this day, I find my productivity will nosedive. My mood, my energy, my brain clarity will nosedive when I'm having junk as well. And it's not just me. It happens to everyone. It's just sometimes people are so stuck in that, I'll call it a rut of unhealthy eating. They don't realize what they could be, how productive they could, how much better their brain could work, how much more successful they could be, how much more money they can make with that health, Joanne, and like you said, being able to enjoy your money later, let alone dying young. I mean, the statistic has changed a bit during the 50s, 60s, 70s. On average, people died 8 to 12 months after they retired. That's horrible. Working your way, and then kind of that's it.
And that's what screwed up the Social Security in most countries, is because that was the case. Now people live 20 years after they retire. And the pensions and the investments were never geared up for that longevity. Yeah. And people need to retire later, I'm not sure I'm ready to retire yet. I quite enjoy what I'm doing. If someone said, I'm on my last 5 years, I think I've got so much left to give. I've started another lease of life, another crazy idea I'm going to get on with.
Exactly, which is beautiful. Which is beautiful, Joanne. I mean, people only retire from what they don't love and don't like doing anymore. And so if you don't like it, do something else versus... I mean, no wonder people either die young or when they retire or get depressed or anxious or suicidal. I would too if I just sat and watched TV all day or drank or ate or smoke all day long. If I had nothing else, no other purpose, I would too. I would get depressed too. I would probably sit and eat myself to death or eat my emotions because, wow, I couldn't sit and watch TV all day. I mean, sure, it sounds fun for a few days. We binge a few days, do nothing, but sure, why not? But I think that gets very boring, very old after a while.
Yeah.
You know? But like you said...
I don't know if it's just me. I often, you know, in those moments of quiet, we think, oh, what if I won the lottery and tens of millions suddenly appeared in my bank account? Would I give up work? I think, well, I may stop what I do in the way I do it, but then suddenly all these business ideas go, oh, I'd love to set this up and I'd love to create that. And exactly. I've always wanted to have a YouTube studio that I could hire out to people and I could really kit it out and think. So I suddenly, with all this capital, I could do this. I could get investment now. I know I could, but I'm just thinking, what would I do with all that money, how I would invest it. So I've got all these crazy ideas, or entrepreneurial ideas.
I love it.
I'd love to try. Yeah, I think if you just say, oh, I'd love to win £1 million so I can do nothing. Well, okay, so what does nothing mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to get very bored sitting by the pool. You're exactly. then going to go and buy gym equipment. You're going to hire a personal trainer. You're going to start working out a bit, or you're going to go for holidays or runs. And even then, you're going to run out of stuff to do nothing, aren't you?
I agree. You know, if I won the lottery somehow, you know, someone's like, here's, you know, $several million for fun. Like, here, I feel like giving you $several million today, James. I mean, you're right. Sometimes the way I would do it would change a bit. I would hire even more people. I would shift how I did it, but I would still always help people. Definitely, I would always help people, hiring all kinds of people instantly to do all the grind. And I have a team, and just hiring a bigger team instantly to do all the grind work. And all I do is teach and speak all day long. And that would be amazing, amazing, amazing. And but at your point, I wouldn't stop. Sure, maybe take a few weeks or a month or three to sit on a beach. But no, after that, I'd want to start, you guys take the money, invest in different businesses, ventures, and all these cool things that help the environment. All these cool things I'd love to do, I would do that. I'd probably start an environmental company if I won a huge, significant amount of money. Some kind of company to help the environment, some kind of company to help people. Wouldn't just sit and do nothing for the rest of my life. Like 44, yeah, and you know, getting a little older, but I'm sure I've got at least 100 in me, if not 120. And that's like 55, 65, 75 years doing nothing. It sounds like it sucks. Like, I want to just have adventures with people and learn and teach people and maybe continue what I'm doing. I was about to say I would teach people. That's interesting. I would say teach people how to work remotely, how to travel while working and making a difference. Like, oh wait, that's what I do. That's what I teach people, how to have more time, more fun, more fulfillment, more productivity, while also working less and getting more done. So I'm like, wait, that's what I do. So I'm continuing doing that.
It's interesting. So you're 44. For me, that is equivalent of 2010 now. So 16 years ago, give or take. Facebook wasn't a thing. AI wasn't a thing. The iPhone really wasn't much of a thing. Everything I have that I value, I care about, literally everything that's important to me, my business, what I do, has come out of that time between your age and my age. So when I was 44, where I am today was not even on anyone's radar. So just think about where, you know, if you can reflect on this conversation in 16 years' time, if you just podcast your way back to 2025, I think 2050, we've got all this shit going on now, 2040. Yeah, I never envisaged that. So that's the potential that each one of us has in 10 or 15 years worth of thinking, isn't it?
It is. And like, really, my job didn't really exist. I mean, sure, there was public speakers years ago too, but a lot of what I do didn't exist, or the problems I help people solve, you know, massive perseverance and helping your teams, you know, persevere and be happy and stay engaged and motivate them to be engaged even more. That really wasn't a problem years ago, and all the stuff that's causing them disengagement, to your point, wasn't really a problem when I was younger, even 15 years ago, 20 years ago. All this stuff, doom scrolling and Facebook and pings and dings and distractions, it wasn't there years ago. So it's fascinating the solutions we come up with to new and modern problems if we just think outside the box. And instead of thinking, oh, I can't, or I can't do this because, or I'm not able to, or I can't do it now because, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a business leader or someone in a business looking to grow into a leader, I invite you to be very, very careful with what you say and with what thoughts you allow to run your mind. You can't because, I can't because. I mean, half our thoughts are not even ours. Half of the thoughts are put there by parents, culture, media, religion, society, grandparents, teachers, you know, exactly, you name it. Exactly, exactly. It's all that when we were young, especially, it just goes in and sticks, and this is good or this is bad or that's not possible, or a good boy does this, or a bad girl, or a good Jewish boy, or a great Christian girl does this or doesn't do this or that, or this is not possible, or you don't do that, or what would people say? You can't do that, or you can't say that, you can't be that. What would people say? What would people think? You may have faced that as well, you know, yourself as well. What would people think? What would people say? Well, who freaking cares? Do you want to be happy or depressed and suicidal and miserable? I was there, right? Do you want to be happy and healthy and wealthy and fulfilled? Or do you want to be right? You know, no, I can't because blank, my kids and my family and my age, I'm too old or too young or too this or not enough this or... And it's amazing. It breaks my heart. That's a lot of the work we do, the limiting beliefs and fears, looking at that as well and people, why people don't do anything, even though they want it so bad they can taste it, but looking at why people don't do things. And again, there's no judgment. I've been there many times. I've I've overanalyzed and fence sat and procrastinated many times and got out of that, got past that, and realized that sometimes when I jump and leap, you know, sometimes, dare I say, leap without thinking, or leap following my heart and my gut, not just, okay, I'm going to jump off. Hopefully this water is deep enough. Let me just jump head first. It's nothing like that, but it's like, okay, you know, my heart, my intuition telling me I need to do something, leaping, if you will, and then doing it. I mean, even Sir Richard Branson says, let's jump off the cliff and build the plane on the way down. And I love that, you know, take action mentality. Let's do it.
Yeah. I've got a saying, which is no great adventure ever starts with no.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let's be conservative, or let's stay home today.
My friends used to complain that whenever they gave me two choices, I'd always say, let's do both. What's up? Let's do both. And they go, make a decision.
That's an interesting thing too. I'd love to touch on that too, because you're right. Most people, they say, well, you know, I can do this or I can do that. I work for a business or I have my own company. Why not both? You can do both. I've done both. I teach people that have done both. I've led people that have done. It's so interesting that so many people they're thinking, or I can do this or this. I can be married or have a business, or I can dedicate time to grow my business, or I can have a relationship. Why can't you have both? It is possible. There's many, many people that do it. You can be a great entrepreneur and have great health, or you can be a mother and father and take care of yourself, or whatever. Like you're saying, it's we got to start being inclusive, if you will, with our and. We can have this and this. Yes, we can do this and we can do this versus, well, we can do either or. I love the phrase, how can we? How can I? How can we not? I can't, or I can only do this, or I can only do this if, or I can only do one. How can I? How can I? There's a will, there's a way. So I love this. Beautiful you touched upon, because people think, well, I can do this or this. Why not both? I love that you said that, Joanne.
Why not both? We should have called the episode, why not both?
Why not both? Exactly. Why not both?
James, it's been absolutely fascinating. I mean, we chatted for about half an hour before we went live, but I could carry on chatting for another few hours.
Likewise, this has been fun. Thank you.
Yeah, we have to draw things to a close. So how do people get hold of you? James R. Elliott, how do we get hold of you?
Great question, my friend. Great question. Like we said, LinkedIn, Facebook, James R. Elliott with one T is a great way to find me as well. You can also, for entrepreneurs, you can visit limitless-entrepreneur.com. And for the more corporate folks looking at more corporate speaking, corporate solutions, that one is probably best to look at the unleashyourpower.com website. But honestly, feel free, if it's easier, LinkedIn or Facebook, feel free to reach out, James R. Elliott, E-L-L-I-O-T. You'll be able to reach me as well. Come hang out. Let's have a conversation. Love talking. Love brainstorming. Love sharing solutions and really helping, you know, businesses small and large find ways to persevere and help their teams persevere during the craziness that goes on. Whether it's amazing, quick growth, because that can be just as troubling sometimes as downfalls of companies or big changes. Changes the market, change the economy, the environment, tariffs, whatever it is, you know, massive growth or massive, you know, decline, times of challenge and change. Love, love, love being able to empower leaders to empower and empowering the teams to do that. So, love to chat, love to hang out, brainstorm. Thanks for having me on today, Joanne. Appreciate it. I had a lot of fun.
Well, if you're listening now, track James down, drop him a DM, drop him a message saying you heard it here. And while you're at it, leave us a review, give us a like, a thumbs up, a follow, all the usual things you do on these things. Love to hear more from you. James, thank you.
A pleasure.
As we bring this conversation to a close, I want to express my deepest gratitude to you, our listener, for lending your ear and heart to the cause of inclusion. Today's discussion struck a chord. Consider subscribing to Inclusion Bites and become part of our ever-growing community, driving real change. Share this journey with friends, family, and colleagues. Let's amplify the voices that matter. Got thoughts, stories, or a vision to share? I'm all ears. Reach out to joe.lockwood@seachangehappen.co.uk and let's make your voice heard. Until next time, this is Joanne Lockwood, signing off with a promise to return with more enriching narratives that challenge, inspire, and unite us all. Here's to fostering a more inclusive world, one episode at a time. Catch you on the next bite.